Aaron, welcome to another episode of the We Have a Meeting podcast. It's great to have you here. I'm going to hit you with a big question. Are you ready?
I think I might be ready for this.
You might be ready. Okay. So I know you've got loads of followers on all different social platforms. What problem do you think people that follow you would have to have in their lives that you can help them solve?
I think several. Waking people up, no BS, taking control of your life. I think I provide good guidance around how to go from point A to point B, whether that be escaping a job, changing a situation which you're in financially, and getting to grips with owning the good and the bad. Yes, I typically talk about finance and entrepreneurship stuff, starting a business. But really, when I start working with people, I'm probably changing the person more so than the nitty gritty of the business and the finance. So I think waking people up is probably a different terminology that I'd use.
Okay. And if someone's listening to this now that needs to be woken up, describe their lives, like say some things that's going to make people sit up and go, shit, I might need to listen to this guy because this could be me.
It's all your fault. All of it. It's all your fault. If you've got no money, your fault. If you're divorced and unhappy, your fault. If you're in a job you don't like, your fault. No one else's. It's not Rishi Sunak. It's not Keir Starmer, although I can't stand that man. It's not Trump's. It's not anyone else's fault other than your own. If you've got 30,000 kids and you've got a dog with three legs, no one cares. Your fault. And I think when you realise it's your fault, your life gets really good because you can change.
Okay. I was gonna say that. What if it's not your fault? So what if you're 16 years old and actually your parents, you've had this awful life? What if it's not technically your fault?
All right, you've just described my life. So own it. What's the alternative? Blame? This is what I'm trying to wake people up. If it's not your fault, what are you gonna do? Blame someone? Oh, it's my mum. Oh, it's my dad. This is where I have no time for people who whine and you know, carry around an out of tune violin. It's owning it. Whether you think it's your problem or not, own it. And go, do you know what? Is what it is. Life's pretty tough, but I'm going to deal with it and I'm going to create a solution, not a problem. I'm going to be proactive rather than reactive. I've worn it. Council estate, parents, no money. I've been there, done it. Throw something at me. I've done it. Hang around with the wrong crowd, skinhead my life, boxed my life for many years of my life. In with a rough crowd, had no money, was going down a wrong path. I've been there, done it. I've worn the T-shirt. No GCSEs, no college, no uni.
So it feels like someone from that kind of background, gone through that kind of hardship, being able to tell yourself the more productive story, something that you're just born with. So it feels like this is something you've always had.
Yeah, I feel like if I look back, there are key moments in my life where I think, oh, have I always taken ownership? Yeah, when I used to play high-level football, Martin Hinshelwood, I used to play for the Centre of Excellence at Brighton. Martin Hinshelwood walked in, and oh, I won't go in the ins and outs, but there was a huge drama, and he was screaming. He said, who's done that? I was like 11 at the time. I just went, that was me. Just owned it. And I remember my mum being really proud. She was like, God, did no one else put their hand up? No, it's just me. I was with Lewis Dunk, who now plays in the first team. I remember looking at Lewis thinking, you're going to put your hand up. Never put his hand up. I just owned it. The good, the bad, the ugly. So that's why my content is incredibly strong and my live streams are incredibly strong. Because when someone says, oh, but Aaron, I'm on Universal Credit. I'm like, yeah, been there. Been there. Pull the next one. Yeah. So if you want something, you can go out and get it. If you have no money, no one's stopping you from earning a fortune.
And one of the things that I know you talk a lot about is the rat race and escaping the rat race. When I think of the rat race, my brain immediately goes to Canary Wharf, banker in the suit, miserable, but just stuck in the cycle. I imagine I'm wrong to think it's just that.
Well, yeah. You know, you've got to think of Dirty Warehouse that I was in, you know, horrible offices, call centers, you know, really it's everything. It's anything and everything. It's essentially, for me, the rat race. There's all these terminologies, rat race, the system, the matrix. really, it's Groundhog Day. Whatever you're doing, wherever you are, it's doing the same thing day in, day out. And for me, it's so much deeper than trying to escape a system. It's wasting time. Like, that's something that I'm so particular on now, is that every day that goes by, I'm fully aware I'm never getting that time back, which is why there has to be a metric of return on time invested. And when you're exchanging time, which you can't buy, you can't save, you can't invest it, you can literally only spend time, you can only spend it. Yeah, then you have to really start calculating, hang on a minute, is there a fair exchange? Like, I'm giving 40, 50 hours. And I think now we're more aware of that because of the information that is circulating, where people are going, hang on a minute, my income's 1600 quid. If I just put some effort into myself, could I actually replace that from working at home in my pants? Yeah, I could. Which is where I come in to empower people to say, look, it's possible. Regardless of what your situation is, you want to build a business to get out of that system, you can.
Okay. I suppose then, as human beings, to play devil's advocate, we're wired to not want to change. It's much easier for us to just settle for, here's the problem cycle. I mean, I know I'm unhappy, but actually, I don't know if I've got the motivation there to go for such a radical change. So what do you think are those questions that people should be asking themselves that might motivate or spark that desire to change?
Okay, so this is really interesting, right? People need consequences. So this is something that I find quite interesting with humans, is that they think that things aren't possible. They don't play a scenario out because the worst case hasn't happened yet. You know, classic case is someone who's overweight, like really overweight, and they go into, you know, to a doctor, and the doctor's like, you know, cholesterol's high, blood pressure's high, like, you seriously need to lose weight, otherwise this is going to be an early life for you. It's typically only on a consequence that people are like, oh, I better make a change. Or when you are nearly running out of money and you can't pay your bills, then you start thinking about, oh my God, how can I get more money? Because I'm so close to the edge, right? So this is the psychology of humans. And there's a great book, which is called I Know What to Do, So Why Don't I Do It? By Dr. Nick Hall. Self-explanatory. And it goes into all the details about, we all know what to do. Like, we should all really not be ripped, but we should all be lean, all of us, to live a long life. Why would you want to invest and save money if you're not going to be healthy, mobile, flexible by 65? It's very backwards, really. So I think people who aren't hardwired to think outside the box and be creative, they need a consequence. And typically, I mean, look, it happens all the time in my comments. Oh my God, I learned the hard way. I got shafted by my coworkers. I got made redundant. I got managed out of my company. I was put on a PIP. I told HR too much. They always learn when it's too late. So my advice to anyone listening, listen to the warning signs. Like, look at the red flags that have already happened. History repeats itself, and you might not think about being a business owner, but I think people need to take more responsibility and start thinking outside the box and start looking after themselves a bit more. I suppose, really, summary, history repeats itself. Even if you're not hardwired to be an entrepreneur, you should be thinking in an entrepreneurial mindset. I believe everyone should be.
It's inspiring. Like, it really is. And I'm with you, and I probably tend to agree with a lot. But to play devil's advocate, surely, like, not everyone can do that. I remember having a friend when we were about 14, and I said, I'm going to go and do all these amazing things. He went, I'm probably going to stay in my hometown and get a job in admin because some people have to stay back. So it's a great story that you paint, but like, there are some people that just will never get there through maybe no luck of their own. And I know what you're saying, it's not their fault, or, well, it is their fault, but responsibility. Surely not everyone can have this amazing life that you talk about, Aaron.
Well, what is an amazing life is super subjective, right? Some people would say my life's amazing, but that's subjective to how they're portraying my life, you know? And so really, it's so subjective. What I would turn around and say is people write things off before they've even tried it. That's what gets me. Oh, no, it's not possible. Why, have you done it? Have you given it a go? No. There was a guy today, and I just replied to him saying, well, enough said. We'll end the conversation there. He said, business is so risky, far, far more secure in a job. And I said, have you started a business in the modern day and age in the digital space? And he went, no. I said, right, well, there's no point continuing the conversation. You're talking from emotions. You haven't given it a go and said to me, Aaron, do you know what? For 6 years straight, I tried to build a business. It just didn't work out. You know, I went through this trial, this error, I failed, I got rejected here. There's no experience. It's all mouth. And I feel that people write it off, and this whole devil's advocate. Isn't it weird how we play this devil's advocate? Why do we have to play the devil's advocate? Look, let's put it this way. All these people that write it off and say, I need to be the plodder, we need workers. If you go and send that person and spend time for 2 weeks straight with seven other entrepreneurs, you will have an eighth entrepreneur. Environment dictates performance. You can have a plodder who will tell himself, because that's all he's ever seen, he or she, well, someone needs to work in admin. Okay, I get that. It's not going to be me. But come and spend 7 days with me and my entrepreneurial friends and business owners. We'll have an eighth. We'll have an eighth entrepreneur on our hands because they've now seen vision.
So what you're saying is entrepreneurship definitely can be taught.
Absolutely. It's environment. If you live in Wales with a population of 17 and a half people, you know, and the net worth of the highest person there is like £32,000, you're not going to be very inspired. But yet, spend a week in Mayfair watching Aston Martins and Lamborghinis and, you know, equity brokers and hedge fund managers and FTSE 100 and FTSE 250 walk about, and spend some time in Canary Wharf. How can you not go, bloody hell, there is more to life if I explore it? You know, how can you not think of doing more? And again, I suppose punchy opinion coming up, it's like people in the gym when they say to me, I live stream a lot of my gym workouts. I'm in great shape under this top, chiseled, in fact, right? No one's given me this body. I am, I'm chiseled. You know, go have a look at the photo. I'm chiseled, right? No one's given me this body. And people say, how many reps do you do? I don't do reps. I just do it until I literally cannot do the last set. Because I find it fascinating, again, when people go, oh, I do four sets of 15. And you're like, you watch them do the 15th rep. And you're like, you've got another 18 reps in you. Why are you not pushing? Because I've gone to the consequence. I know at 60 years old, I will give everything and all of my money to go back to 32 years old. I'll give it all. So right now at 32, when I train like a beast. You have to explore more. Like, this is my whole thing.
I want to talk to you about, so TikTok is an interesting place, and I bet your comments, some of them are fucking awful, and I hate to live in that some days, but I want to talk to you. I know that a lot of like Gen Z are on TikTok. Okay, they're consuming your content. What have you learned about the work ethic and mindset of Gen Z? Are we going through a phase where actually they're all lazy and they don't want to work, or is that like, are they rumors? Are actually Gen Z the next generation that are going to smash it?
Yeah, I think, obviously there's always two sides to the coin, but I think it's predominantly hyped up wrongly online. I think Gen Z, even millennials, like we've seen the transition, you know, from hard work to smart work. It's exactly the same. They just see smart work now. We saw hard work into smart work. They just see smart work. You know, we need to start getting rid of old narratives. When people say business, people think of limited companies, or we're still holding on to vehicles, sole trader, company's house, you know, accountant, tax advisors, printers, office, chairs. It's not. It's literally a laptop and a phone. Like, the fact that my phone has earned me over 150 grand in the last 24 months from TikTok, over £150,000 gross collectively. This phone here, not even including my gross income from my businesses, a phone through TikTok has earned me more money than literally, I don't know what to do with. Majority of it is sat in account and just sort of sits there. Why would you want to work hard? So no, Gen Z's like, hang on a minute, I can't buy houses for 6 pistachio nuts anymore. But what I can do is I can build a business, and social media can pay me very well. Social media is a business, by the way. That's something else we need to adopt. Social media is not social media. It is business. Branding is business. Instagram is business. TikTok is business. YouTube is business. If it has analytics and it can be measured, it's a business. So no, I think Gen Z are actually in a very exciting time where you can literally build million and multi-million pound companies from as a one-man band. I don't think they're lazy at all. I think, in fact, they're very creative. I've got an 11-year-old son upstairs at the moment. He'll be on $4,000 or $5,000 in the next three, four years. That's not even a joke. My when he is 14, he'll probably be bringing in gross about $5,000 a month. He's not going to college. He's not going to uni. Probably pull him out of school in year nine, in 2 years. He doesn't need to be at school. He doesn't need to be at school. He's learned everything. There's nothing else my son needs to know at school. Everything else will be through me and his mum.
Where does the ability to delay gratification fit into this? Something that we spot sometimes with younger people. There's a bit of shiny object syndrome going on.
I think mental resilience, actually having some self-mastery. I think you learn that over time. I think, you know, I wanted to be a millionaire by 25. That didn't happen. You know, you want to be something. I think you just learn that things take time. So delayed gratification, I think you're forced to realize that's what needs to happen. You kind of learn from thinking, right, this is where I want to be at a certain point. You get to that certain point. Maybe you go through a period of disappointment and, you know, you're like, oh, I didn't hit goals. But then you realize that it is very much a journey. You know, a very wise man who ran a very successful business years ago told me, I was talking to him about what I wanted to do. This is years ago. This is like 10 years ago, right? Really before I got my teeth sunk in, and I was still in a full-time job. And I said to him everything I want to do. And he said, mate, I love it. You know, I wish you all the best. He said, but I promise you, he's like in his mid-40s at this time. He said, honestly, mate, this whole thing is a journey. Like, it's going to be so tough, but honestly, just enjoy the process. And these timelines that you've put on it, he said, I'd wipe those. He said, I really hope you hit them, but it's unlikely. And I was a little bit like, oh, you know, probably the truth, but I'm going to give it a good shot. And it was the truth. I didn't hit those goals. So I feel like delayed gratification, you come to realize it and it's a maturity thing. Mm-hmm. I think it's just something you learn. You can tell someone to have patience, but they'll learn the hard way, I believe.
Okay. And then what about, you've probably got an interesting take on status, right? Because you've worked your way up. You've come from humble working class background, and you probably have noticed that the more successful you get, you're playing different status games. Like you talked before about the guy in Wales, he might be playing a £32,000, how can I go out with the most attractive girl in the local pub? Maybe the guy in Mayfair's playing more of the Lamborghini status game. So what have you learned about status and where true happiness lies?
Well, I think, again, that's social circle stuff. Like for me and my friends, you know, like social circle, business sort of friends and colleagues, I suppose, you know, who work directly with me and stuff like this, I'm pretty lucky. I don't really have people that buy into the whole status thing. I'm actually the opposite, really. I am from humble beginnings, so I don't believe you should hold on to a title or a status. I think it's quite refreshing that no matter how big your success is that you are still quite, just look, being a nice person goes a long way. And I've kept my values and standards. So I've only attracted very similar standards and values. And look, I've got some friends. I mean, I work with two of Lord Sugar's companies who are partnered with Peak Performance. I was talking to the Amstrad boys this morning. I was even on the phone earlier to Joe Barron, who's Lord Sugar's grandson. I have very wealthy friends now. One of my good friends, Michael Howard, I mean, he does over 300 odd million a year. One of the nicest guys. None of them have a status. None of them have status. So I think you attract what standards you set yourself. But my conversations aren't the same as what they used to be. So I am very picky on the conversations. I won't have £30,000 conversations anymore because my problems to solve aren't £30,000 conversations. So I think naturally you have to evolve. Like I wouldn't go and ask an old coworker. There's one coworker who's a dear friend of mine who I still meet like once every 6-7 weeks. I wouldn't ask him for business advice. There's no point. He's not done it. But I'll have a friendly chat with him. So I think you can remain humble, but your conversations as you grow as a person do definitely change, and you learn to understand who you talk to about what.
And when you think of, you said something interesting there about like titles. I think I've seen something online about like work titles. What do you mean by that?
Well, I'd ban them. That's what it is. I've done YouTube videos on this. I've short form content. I would ban job titles which give ego boosts, which rub the ego. Like manager, like general manager, we don't actually need them. What you need is you need a title that actually is descriptive of the job that you are doing. So if you are some form of a manager currently, and you have a team under you, well, really, you are the spearhead, right? So you're leading the team. So to get rid of manager, who's it going to pee off? Or who's it going to harm? It's going to harm no one, but it's going to pee off egotistic, narcissistic people, typically baby boomers. We don't need to crack the whip anymore. I have a dear friend who's done incredibly well. He's in his, I think Benji's now 25. He turns over sometimes about anywhere between about 2 to 3 million a month. He's done very well at a young age. He runs the fastest content management agency called Connect Management. Open floor. I've been to his North London office. Great environment, happy culture, gives away holidays, bonuses, pays everyone very well. And there's a happy culture. Everyone's got an appropriate title, you know, of some sort, team lead or, you know, content management leader or, you know, whatever it might be. But it's appropriate to the job title and there's no ego that's given. You're not given the job role if there's an ego with it. And there's correct hiring. I think this is the problem and why I would get rid of titles. You give a title to a wrong individual and you've got a dictator on your hands. And then what happens is people start to become suppressed and they start to mold to fit the dictator so that they're not picked on, right? And then you've got this real sort of toxic environment. You don't need big punchy titles. Unfortunately, that's the way the main corporate world is. But, you know, the great thing is if you go on to start a business, you can change these problems.
So is the issue then, is the issue the job title or is it the twats that then receive the job title?
It's both. I think it's hiring. Number one, it's hiring. And I think the job titles don't help. I think giving someone who shouldn't have passed a probation period because they haven't got leadership skills, and then they're given that word manager, you know, manager is man management. So it's very watching what you're doing, overseeing what you're doing, leading eventually into micromanaging. So the titles, I think, are very damaging. And let's face it, they're not aligned with the job role. If you are running a team, you are there to support, offer resources, educate, and show compassion and empathy and make sure the team are okay so the job gets done. There's a massive difference between hearing leader to manager. You can even hear it. There's a big, big difference. So yeah, if I had my way, yeah, I'd F off all the titles.
You make a compelling argument. I'll sign your petition, Aaron, if it comes this way. I want to talk to you about money. Can I ask a personal question?
You can ask.
What's your relationship like with money? And has it always been the same?
Well, I did an article recently for the Daily Express on this. My relationship with money has always got better. There's two ways that I look at this. There are some people that stay within families and environments that they have really bad, poor management of money, and it remains like that because no one evolves, so it never changes. I came from a family that didn't really have money, but my parents were sensible. So again, there is a lot of emphasis. I talk a lot about this on my TikTok and my YouTube and my live streams. It really comes down to the parents. School doesn't teach you. So it's what you first see with your parents. And my parents would never spend money that they didn't have. So I had this natural ability to kind of save more than I was spending, because I just thought, well, that's kind of how you avoid the fear of running out of money, right? And as I started making my money, as I sort of got older, I wanted to make more money because I realized you worry less the more money you're making. So I wasn't falling into the whole trap of, oh, you know, am I able to pay for this? And then when my son came into my life at 20, you know, just fast forward, my relationship got even better because I had a wake up call and perspective like, oh my God, you know, I need to make sure he's okay. And for me, not everyone's like this, what I'm about to say. I've always had the ability, and I did this very early on, I always thought of my life at about 60 years old. So again, I thought of the consequence. I went to the end and then imagined my life and then worked back. And I think the idea of that came from a Robert Kiyosaki book. I don't know if it's cash flow quadrant or rich dad, poor dad, but he was like, imagine yourself in a home and like you haven't got money and you've fallen off your bed and, you know, they're kicking you to put you back in. And I thought, how much money do I want to have when I retire? What do I want? You know, do I want to be able to leave the UK at any given moment if it gets so bad? Do I want my son to have private medical care and all this kind of stuff? So I just make smart decisions. But here's the trick where I've won financially. Over the last 10 years, guess what? My outgoings have never gone up. Fractional, you know, like with some couple of business direct debits and a couple, you know, couple of memberships that I have. You know, you're talking literally fractional changes. But my income has gone up significantly. I think I, look, my outgoings at the moment will probably fluctuate between 1900 to 2100 a month. That's it. And I earn a lot more than that, by the way.
Interesting. Okay. I'd be silly not to ask because it's just come up a few times. Your stance on the education system in the UK.
Okay. So here's, I spoke about this on a podcast the other day. What's the line that we all hear about the education system? It's what?
Broken.
Now, I want to ask you a question. Or is it?
Go on.
Well, is it broken or is it doing exactly what it's designed to do?
Well, I always wonder, is it designed to bring us into sort of factory worker mentality? So you've got the habits to just put you straight into that kind of 9-to-5 culture and you'll listen and do what you're told and those sorts of things. But I get paranoid about, I've got young children, I get paranoid about these things.
I don't think it's broken at all, really, now. I think it's working perfectly, which is why it will never change. And I think it's churning out the worker bees in the masses. And I think it's doing what it needs to do, which is why you need to, as a parent, make a decision what you're going to do. A lot of my friends, by the way, who are a little bit older than me, they've all pulled their children out of school. Like by year 9, they're out of school. There's no point. If someone said to me now, oh, you know, they need to tell me one thing, even like just putting it on YouTube, tell me one thing my son needs to know past year 9.
I can't think of anything. I actually can't think of anything that nothing. High school never felt useful to me. So
let me explain my son right now. He does editing. He's got his own YouTube channel, right? He's very creative. Not every child is very outspoken and can network and build relationships. My son's great. He's a mix of me and his mum, you know, very outspoken, the both of us, very headstrong, the both of us. He can build relationships. He can be a lone wolf or he can work in a team. He's very smart, very clued up. He's been allowed to explore creativity. He's very, obviously, kids now, you know, he knows how to work an iPad, laptop, super, super clued up. Just through his video editing skills and through my friends, through people I'll introduce him to. Look, I've taken both my full-time editors from a full-time job to full-time in editing, both of them. Both of them do not work in the job anymore. He'll be my third. I'll introduce all my friends, Matt Fidesz, Simon Squibb, Pete Comalafe, Rebecca P. Fox, Julius Dean, Brandon B., anyone that wants an editing services, I'll introduce him to my son. I'll pay my son a monthly retainer. He'll be earning more than his teacher. At 14. What? Why does he need to go to school? He doesn't. Because the metric for every adult is money. Every metric for every adult is money. Why do we go to work every day? So we can actually live and eat. Otherwise we die. So the metric is money. And then structured well, he'll have financial freedom because we'll build a media agency. It'll be like Knightley's Media. He'll own the agency. I'll be a co-founder or whatever and sit as a silent partner. And then he'll structure it. He doesn't need to go to school. Doesn't need to go to uni. Doesn't need to do any of it. He's earning more than the teacher.
What if someone hasn't got a dad like you and they want to be a lawyer or they want to be a teacher or something like that? What do we tell them at year 9?
Who, the child or the parent wants them to be a lawyer?
The child.
Okay, so second question to you, because I do a lot of street interviews with this. Have you ever met anyone that came out the womb that went, I want to be a doctor? I've never met one, ever. I've never met an individual that didn't have an auntie, an uncle. It was a religious thing. It was a culture thing. It was a family thing. It was a bragging rights. I've never met anyone in my entire 32 years on this earth, you know, call it 25 conscious. I've never met anyone that has ever gone, do you know what? I will give anything to be a doctor, to do 80 hours, stressed, understaffed, underpaid. I just want it so bad. I've never met anyone. I've never met anyone that wants to be a doctor or a lawyer. It's a pressure from family, from baby boomers who still want bragging rights. Oh, my son's gone to Eton. Yeah, where's your daughter? But does your son actually want to go? Well, not really. You just wanted to tell everyone at a barbecue that you've got a son in Eton, don't you? That's all it is. But ironically, I earn more than what that doctor will earn. That's the ironic thing about all of this.
Okay. So it feels like it always comes back to money.
Yeah, it is, because that's the one metric. You know, when people say money isn't the root of all happiness, I mean, it's just nonsense. If you've come from a silver spoon family, you know, and you were born in, made in Chelsea, all right, money probably don't make you happy. You've had it in your entire life. Until you've been broke and you've had no money. Have you ever driven a car every week for years upon years on the Orange where you've only got 50 miles left and every drive you do is on the Orange? I've been there where me and my partner had no money, nothing. I was the only income, young child. Like, both of us grew up on separate council estates, not too far away from each other. No money. So when you come from no money and then you know money and you have a great relationship with money, because money's not bad. Like, the physical money, that's like saying, my pot of Vaseline's bad. It's not. But if I was to launch this at your head, you know, you can't say, oh, the Vaseline's really bad. No, I'm bad. I launched it at your head. So people who say money isn't the root of all happiness, but they say it's the root of all evil, they have massive insecurities, or they've always come from money. You can't do anything in this world without money. Imagine having a relationship with no money. Wouldn't last, would it? Wouldn't.
But I guess I might be confused here, Aaron, because obviously you make some really interesting points, but obviously, like, money, it stems back to money, and I get that completely. That's why I asked about money beliefs. But then your outgoings haven't changed. So yeah. I guess what gives?
In what?
So obviously, like, you feel motivated, disciplined, like you're working towards making sure you've got enough money, your son's got enough money that he's protected and safe and things like that. But then your lifestyle hasn't changed. So, like, for what? So that you can be 60 and you can make sure that you can have it. What's the bit?
Because I've obtained the one thing that every adult deeply wants. What do you think that is? I've obtained it.
Is it the opposite of nothing?
I've obtained time freedom. Every day I do what I want. I don't answer to no one. If I get a parking ticket, I pay it. I'll park on a double yellow just for convenience. And I don't mind paying the ticket because my outgoings have never gone up. We've eaten out at a restaurant every evening for the last, I don't know, nearly 2.5 years, because that's a very small amount of money to be spending. We're not materialistic. We have no debt. We own everything. And I don't worry about money. There is no cost of living to me because I've not been bad with money. I've always evolved. I've always upped my skill set. I've always adapted. I've always developed. And as a result, if I want to wake up and just sort of piddle about and, I don't know, just sort of fart ass about, I can. And just sort of walk about if I wanted to and just, you know, go into a forest and start chopping down trees if I wanted to. Because I'm not on anyone's schedule. I'm on my schedule because I'm now, and every adult wants what I have, financial security for time. That's what I have. Every adult wants it.
So will there be a point where actually, I've been listening to a lot of Andrew Wilkinson recently, like burning the boat. So, like, there'll be a point where you've got that. It doesn't matter how much more money you make, but obviously it feels like you're probably not playing the money game anymore. So what game are you playing? What are you running towards?
Just enjoying my life. That's it. I'm not a materialistic guy. I'm not like, oh, I want to get the Lambo. I'm not bothered about a big house. I live in a nice house. I'm not bothered about a big house. I'm not bothered about the fancy cars. I have nice cars, but I'm not bothered about that. I'm not driven by social media. What makes me happy? I have no mental health issues because I've always done what I wanted to do. I don't argue at home because I don't worry about money. I don't have to argue. I don't have to argue with the boss. I'm not within the 90% of UK working adults that hate their job. For about 45 million people, there's about 291 million diagnosed with clinical depression due to the workplace. We far more than that, but that's what the WHO says. I'm not in any of that, Paul. I don't have panic attacks. I haven't got ADHD. Every fucker's got ADHD. I've got ADHD. I've got depression. Yeah, I don't suffer with anxiety. I don't compare myself. I'm winning. I'm literally winning.
So 60 years old, I bump into you. We have a chat. What, from 32 to 60 now, 28 years, what do you want to tick off? What do you want to achieve? What do you want to do before then?
Well, my main thing really for the next 10 years is we sell peak, we exit for about 25 to 30 million, which we will do. I walk away with about 8.5 million in cash. So does my business partner. I go buy a cottage, probably in Arundel, buy a load of copper pans, buy some more firearms, probably get fat at that point, and go shooting every Sunday and eat roast dinners, and no one will know who I am because I'll look so different because I'll be fat. And that's about it. And hopefully you don't bump into people and just live my life. I'm very simplistic. I'm so bullish. I don't keep up with anyone other than myself. And the reason I don't suffer with any mental health issues is because I've never done anything I don't want to do, ever. And I don't answer to anyone. And because my expenses have never gone up, going back to the finances, because my expenses have never gone up, I've never been financially pressured to make a decision. So if someone says to me, well, I think we should do this, I just go, no, don't need to. Oh, Aaron, should we go? No, I don't want to. Well, we've all got to do it. Yeah, I know, but you're financially pressured into doing it. I'm going to do that. I just want to share something, right, real quick. A friend of mine who's incredibly wealthy, I won't say his name, he stays out of the public eye. He took his family to Las Vegas, right? They paid for a penthouse suite. His wife booked it. This is a dear friend of mine in London. They paid about $80,000 for this penthouse. They got there. The wife was like, really not happy with it. This is not what we wanted. I wanted this feature and all these extra stuff. Anyway, husband said, well, what do you want to do? Well, she looks online. There was another exact like penthouse suite that they wanted in Vegas down the road. It was a non-refundable at that point. They left $80,000 and they just went into another hotel and put down like another $90,000. And he said, it's peanuts. Doesn't mean that I haven't got to put up. I haven't got to argue. Just do it. And that's the one thing I was like, I fucking love that. He doesn't have to put up with shit. I'm not at that level, but I say no. I don't have to do things. I live life on my terms.
I like it. Aaron, I've enjoyed this. You're very, from social media anyway, like you say what you're thinking. And I think a lot of people wish that they could, and they don't, but I think you're inspiration that they should. Lots of great themes. One last question before I let you go. If someone's listening to this, and we started with people should be waking up, if people are like, you know what, fuck, I'm ready to wake up now, what book should they go and buy today to wake up?
The one I always recommend is Les Brown, The Power of Purpose. I've listened to it like 3 times. It's one of my favorite books because it's timeless. And also it shares Les's journey and, you know, from no good at academics, very, very poor background, going into business, you know, racial discrimination, very tough sort of journey in becoming someone essentially. And really any story where someone has come from nothing, I love getting on board with that, which is why I'll always relate to people who come from nothing. And again, why I suppose one of my final messages is that there is no valid excuse why you can't go ahead and do something when quite literally you can start with zero money, zero experience, and you don't need anyone to validate or give you the nod that you can do something. You literally just go and do. You know, great saying, just to finish on, really listen to what I'm saying. Jason Greystone, who's a dear friend of mine, did $12 million last year in 1 year. He's a mentor of mine, but also within business with me. He said, if you're in business, be in business. And what that means is stop looking like you're busy and actually work on your business. And when you've done something good, showcase a little bit of it to social media, but then get back into business. There's distracted, there's successful. There's no in between. You're either successful or you're distracted and looking busy. Yeah.
I love it. And if people want to check you out, where would you drive them to? Where would you send them to, Aaron?
Just Aaron Knightley on anything. Just Aaron Knightley's pretty much, I think, my handle for everything now. Although just be cautious on TikTok. There's about 70 of me at the moment, but there's only one of me. I follow zero.
Okay. We'll keep an eye out. Aaron, thank you so much for joining us.
My pleasure.